Right. So we're diving into Rosenblatt v. Baer today. And, you know, First Amendment law, it can be a real head scratcher sometimes.
Oh, absolutely. It's
But this case is huge. It gets at the heart of free speech, libel. What happens when criticizing the government maybe steps on some toes?
It really does, yeah.
We're going to break it down for you so you really get why it matters.
You see, this case, it's not just some legal battle. It gets at this dilemma America's always kind of wrestled with. How do we protect free speech, especially that tough criticism of the government, but also protect people's reputations?
Okay, so imagine this. You're Alfred Baer. You're running a ski resort up in New Hampshire.
Right.
It's county-owned, yep. So you're basically a government employee. Things are going fine. Skiers are happy.
Yeah.
Then, boom, you're fired.
And to make things worse, a local paper runs this column that's basically tearing apart how the resort was run under Baer.
Ouch.
Yeah. Finances are questioned. It gets a little shady.
Talk about a bad week, right?
Yeah.
And here's the kicker. The columnist, Rosenblatt, never actually names Baer directly. But he asks these really pointed questions like, what happened to all the money last year and every other year? I mean, you can see why Baer feels like it's about him.
Exactly. And this is where that tension I mentioned really comes in. Is this just fair game commenting on a public service? Or does it cross the line into libel, hurting Baer's reputation?
So Baer, understandably upset, he sues Rosenblatt for libel.
Mm-hmm.
And get this, he wins. The jury sides with him, gives him a decent amount of money, and even the New Hampshire Supreme Court upholds the decision. You might think, that's it, right? But no.
Not so fast.
The case goes up to the U.S. Supreme Court.
Yeah.
And they totally overturn it.
It gets interesting here.
They start picking apart how the lower courts handled things.
Yeah.
First, they don't like how the jury was told to basically assume the column was about Baer just because he was the manager.
Right, right.
Supreme Court's not happy about that.
And you can see why. You can't just sue anyone who criticizes your whole group. You got to show they were coming after you specifically.
Otherwise, everyone would be suing over bad Yelp reviews.
Exactly. Yeah. They're looking for a much stronger link. And this is where Rosenblatt v. Baer builds on another big case, New York Times v. Sullivan. Do you remember that one?
Oh, for sure.
That set a high bar for public officials to win libel cases. Basically, if you're in the public eye, you're going to get criticized. You can't just yell libel every time.
That I have thick skin.
Exactly. They have to prove what's called actual malice. They have to show the person making the statement knew it was false or just didn't care about the truth.
But Rosenblatt adds this twist. Sullivan was about elected officials.
Mm-hmm.
So does that actual malice standard apply to folks like our ski resort manager, appointed but not elected?
That is the question, right? Does that extra protection apply to these appointed officials too?
And the majority opinion, written by Justice Brennan, says, yep. He says anyone with substantial responsibility for or control over governmental affairs, even if they weren't elected, should be considered a public official in these cases.
It all comes down to accountability, right? The public needs to know what's happening in their government, and that means scrutinizing the people in charge.
So if your job gives you real power in government, be ready for the public eye.
And that scrutiny, even if it's harsh, like Justice Brennan said, is protected by the First Amendment. Unless, of course, it was deliberately false or made up with no regard for the truth.
So what about Baer, our ski resort manager? Was he a public official under this new definition?
Well, the Supreme Court actually doesn't decide that. They send it back to the lower courts to figure out.
What a cliffhanger. But before we get into what happened next, let's look at some of the other opinions in this case. Because the Supreme Court, they rarely all agree.
Right. The other opinions, the concurring and dissenting ones, they're fascinating. They add these really important layers to the whole debate about where we draw the line with free speech about the government.
For example, you've got Justice Douglas, who's basically ready to throw out all libel suits when it comes to public issues.
Well,
then there's Justice Black, who goes even further, saying libel laws are straight up unconstitutional when applied to public officials, period. Strong opinions.
And then you have Justice Fortas disagreeing, saying sending the case back down is pointless because Sullivan wasn't even decided until after Baer's trial. How can you apply a standard that didn't exist then? He's worried about forcing state law to fit a federal mold before it's ready. It's a good point.
So you've got these different viewpoints on the court, all grappling with how to balance free speech and protecting reputations.
It shows how tough it is to interpret the First Amendment, right? Where do we draw the line?
And how do we make sure we can have a real open debate about public stuff without stifling concerns about defamation?
That's the question Rosenblatt v. Baer makes us face. And the story's not over yet.
Okay, so the Supreme Court kicks it back down to New Hampshire. Now they got to decide if Bear's a public official or not. You'd think that wraps it up, right?
Seems like it should, yeah.
But the New Hampshire Supreme Court, even with this guidance from the big leagues, they still can't agree.
You're kidding. They punted again.
Pretty much. They said the original trial records were just too fuzzy. To figure out if Bear really had substantial responsibility, like the Supreme Court said, they needed to know more about his actual job, what he did day to day.
Wow, so after all that back and forth, poor Alfred Bear is still in limbo, doesn't know if he's a public official or not. And that's not just some legal label, it could decide the whole case.
Exactly, it has real consequences. And this shows us Rosenblatt v. Bear didn't create some easy checklist for figuring out who's a public official. It's case by case, looking at someone's real power, not just their job title.
Right, it's about the substance of their role.
So anyone listening, if you're ever dealing with a defamation case, especially if it involves government work, Rosenblatt v. Bear reminds us context matters. Don't assume your title automatically makes you a public official.
And the opposite, too. Don't think just because you weren't elected, you're off the hook. It's about what you actually do, how much influence you have on the government.
So we've seen how Rosenblatt v. Bear played out, all these twists and turns. But why should we still care about this case now, almost 60 years later?
It's still so relevant. First, Rosenblatt solidified this idea that the actual malice standard from New York Times v. Sullivan, it's not just for elected officials. It covers a much wider group, basically any government employee whose work really affects the public.
It makes sense, right? To have these open discussions about government, we need to be able to look closely at those in power, even if they weren't directly voted in.
Absolutely. And this is huge today, especially with all the controversy around social media companies, how they control what people post. Are they acting like public forums? Are they subject to these same First Amendment limits? It's complicated, but it goes back to those same questions Rosenblatt v. Bear raised.
So this case from 1966, it's still shaping how we think about free speech in the digital age, huh?
It really is. And another big thing from Rosenblatt is that focus on the of and concerning rule in defamation cases. Remember, the Supreme Court said Bear couldn't just sue because he felt the column implied bad things about him. He had to prove the statements were specifically aimed at him.
So put the brakes on those group libel claims. Not enough to be part of a group that's being criticized. You got to show you were the direct target.
Exactly. That helps prevent all these pointless lawsuits and stops people from chilling free speech just because they say they were kind of sort of harmed by association.
So Rosenblatt actually strengthened free speech protections in a couple of ways. It broadened the actual malice standard and made it harder to prove defamation, especially when it's a whole group being criticized.
And that brings us to a key question for you, the listener. What does this actually mean for you? How does it affect your life, your rights, your ability to speak your mind?
Yeah, let's cut through all the legal jargon and get to the heart of it. What are the key takeaways you can actually use?
Okay, so we've really been digging into Rosenblatt v. Bear, and it's clear this case, it's not just some old legal thing. It really gives us this roadmap for navigating that tricky area where free speech and defamation clash, especially when it comes to people involved in government. But how can you use what we've learned?
You can think of Rosenblatt v. Bear as giving you these tools to analyze situations where someone is saying their reputation was hurt by something said or written about them, particularly when it relates to their government work.
Like a toolkit for spotting those defamation dangers.
Exactly. And the first tool in that kit is a question, is the person claiming defamation a public official? And remember, because of Rosenblatt, that's not just limited to elected positions, right?
Right. We have to go deeper. Look at how much influence and responsibility someone's job actually has.
Exactly. It's not about their title. It's about if they have that substantial responsibility for how the government runs. That's the key phrase from the case. So if the answer is yes, they are a public official, what's next?
Then we pull out our next tool. Was the statement actually about them, specifically of and concerning this person, you know?
Because if someone's just criticizing a government agency in general, that might not be enough to win a defamation case, right?
That's right. Rosenblatt makes it clear that even public officials should be protected from false and damaging statements that are directly aimed at them.
But what if this statement is about them and they're considered a public official? That's when it gets tough, right?
It does. That's where they have to prove actual malice, which we know is a really high standard to meet.
And that's where New York Times v. Sullivan comes back in.
Exactly. To win a defamation case as a public official, you'd have to show the person who made the statement knew it was false, or they just acted recklessly and didn't care about the truth.
It can't just be a mistake or getting something wrong.
Right. There has to be intent or at least extreme carelessness. And that's there for a reason. It protects free speech and keeps people from being afraid to speak their minds about the government.
It allows for that open debate, even if it gets a little heated or, as we said before, a little unpleasantly sharp.
It's vital, that open exchange of ideas.
So to sum it all up, Rosenblatt v. Baer really acts as this shield for free speech, especially when it comes to holding the government accountable. But it's not a free pass for anyone to just say anything they want.
Exactly. There are limits. You can't just make stuff up about people, even if they work for the government.
It's all about finding that balance.
Yeah, it is. We need that public scrutiny of government actions, but we also have to protect people's reputations from unfair attacks.
And that balance is something we're still working on, especially as technology changes how we communicate, how we get our information, and how public discussions happen.
Think about what Justice Brennan wrote in Rosenblatt. Criticism of government is at the very center of the constitutionally protected area of free discussion.
It's a powerful idea, isn't it? We as citizens, we have this duty to participate in those discussions, to ask tough questions about those in power and hold them accountable.
But we also have to do it responsibly, thoughtfully, and honestly.
It's a real challenge, this whole world of free speech, defamation, and how we talk to each other in public. It's constantly changing.
It really is. But Rosenblatt v. Baer gives us this framework, these principles to guide us.
Well, we hope this deep dive helped you understand this landmark case a little better and that it gives you the knowledge to be more informed and active citizens.
Thanks for joining us.